Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
What has damaged Ruto is that of late he has come out as looking very angry. I think the provocation from the president, provocation from the ministers, has made him rather angry.
Public opinion polls show former Prime Minister Raila Odinga ahead of incumbent Deputy President William Ruto with 8 days to Kenya's general election.
So Uganda is now working at what we call the lowest level of government. It's called a parish. It has about 3,000 to 5,000 people.
A new initiative in Uganda to empower youth includes vocational skills training and a new approach to trade.
This is the world we live in. Some people, they rejoice the misery of others. Others, they sympathize the misery of other people.
And Bowman Lusambo, a former minister of Zambia's Lusaka province, accepts a court ruling which nullifies his election as a parliamentarian. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Public opinion polls show former Prime Minister Raila Odinga ahead of incumbent Deputy President William Ruto with 8 days to Kenya's general election. The latest survey released by Trend and Insights for Africa, or TIFA, on Friday shows Odinga as the preferred candidate with 46.7%, followed closely by Ruto with 44.4%. The recent polls come as political parties intensify their campaigns before the election. Kenyans are scheduled to vote on August 9 to elect a new president, Senate, and National Assembly. The presidential contest is expected to be competitive between the two men. Some analysts predict there could be a runoff if neither of the two leading candidates garners over 50% of the total votes cast. For the latest political developments and analysis of the much-anticipated elections, I reach Attorney James Mwamu. He is a former president of the Law Society of Kenya.
The country is slowly beginning to accept that Raila Odinga is going to be the fifth president. What has helped Raila mostly is the running mate, because the running mate comes from the larger community. Martha Karua is a lady who has fought for freedoms, and so quite a number of people trust her. On the converse, what has damaged Ruto is that of late he has come out as looking very angry. I think the provocation from the president, provocation from the ministers, has made him rather angry. So the population is feeling that it may be unsafe to entrust the leadership of the country with William Ruto because of the anger that he has.
I heard a number of people say that what might have tripped up the deputy president was his insistence that he will establish a commission to investigate the outgoing president, and that some people say did not sit well because they said it appeared that he wants to witch hunt or launch an investigation against his former boss. Could this have affected his political stance in the eyes of Kenyan voters?
Yes, quite a number. The constituency where Uhuru comes from is big, and that is where a lot of support of William Ruto is. So the older people and the elderly women, When they hear something like that, you appear to be somebody bent on witch hunt. Because they said you worked with this gentleman for 10 years. If you are in the same government and you served as a deputy, that therefore means that what the presidency did on your behalf. When you are now going to investigate him, it means that you are bent on witch hunt and revenge. So that scared a number of people, and scared a number of people who are conservative, and especially the business community. You know, when you start something like that in Africa, it raises a lot of suspicion. What are your intentions? In my view, I think it was a political blunder, and a big one, because now even the moderates who are undecided begin to see you as somebody who you do not have agenda of your own, but you're going there to witch hunt or to create some reprisals against the retiring president. That may not sit well with many Kenyans.
Do you think he has enough time, with 8 days to go, do you think he has enough time to self-correct?
I doubt, because he's beginning to get angry and angry every day. So I doubt whether he really has enough time to recover. He possibly is coming to terms that this thing is lost, because the people who also are very close to him, some of them are already shifting away. They are not joining him in the campaign. When you see that happening, they begin to see where this thing is heading. They therefore don't want to burn their bridges with the incoming president and deputy and the people around him, because they will still want to, some of them are businessmen, so they still want their businesses to be protected. So I doubt whether he really has time to recover. I think that by next week, the gap could be just about a 10-point gap.
A lot of people have also expressed concern about politically related violence during the election process itself. How are Kenyans reacting to this?
There will be skirmishes, yes. Here and there, that is expected in any election. But the magnitude of political violence, of the one we saw in 2008 and 2013, and partly 2017, I don't foresee that. There will be, well, people protesting, running along the road, maybe for about 2-3 days, but I think that will be it. Kenyans have learned that the people who take over, a lot of them come with huge promises. At the end of the day, you know, they just end up sometimes not doing much. You know, when you see a vice president rising in the podium and accusing his own president of corruption, and yet he has not resigned, you know, from the position of power. So people begin to say, but if you are promising us change, you are saying this government is corrupt, you are still using the resources of that government, what is it that you are going to bring? So, you know, people have realized that it is not worth fighting a fellow Kenyan or losing a life because of political contest.
Attorney James Mwamu is a former president of the Law Society of Kenya. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. In Uganda, President Yoweri Museveni has formed an advisory group comprising members from the public and private sectors. It will help him identify sectors of the economy that could boost exports to regional and international partners. The move forms part of the government's plan to jumpstart job creation and improve living standards. Odrek Rwabwogo is a senior presidential advisor on special duties. He is currently visiting states and cities in the U.S. as part of the effort to identify key areas that could help boost Ugandan exports. I caught up with Rwabwogo via Skype while he was in Washington, D.C. In part two of this interview, Rwabwogo talks about empowering Uganda's youth, including vocational skills training, and in this new approach to trade.
Our country is 78% below 30 years. They are all online. They are looking at what happens in Argentina and the U.S. They want the same standard for their products. They want traceability systems to be installed. So it's kind of, you have to work with what you have, but you have to put your hand into the future and look at these big markets. So Uganda is now working at what we call the lowest level of government. It's called a parish. It has about 3,000 to 5,000 people. We are taking small amounts of money to farmers to build cooperatives so that it is very easy to aggregate and standardize before you can deal with processing for the developed markets or sale of raw food around us, South Sudan, Congo, which are not yet growing food, but which will very soon, because every country wants to protect its food market. So we deal with what we are able to deal with in the region, but we aim for the best.
How do you intend carrying the youth along? Because you talked about the youth. How do you carry them along in this grand scheme of things, trying to improve the living standards of the people?
So our education system is really outward looking. What do I want to become, either as a lawyer, politician, because these are high paying professions? We're changing our curriculum in Uganda to ensure that the same young person at year 12 in Germany, who is able to work for the Mercedes-Benz and give you the best product, the same kind of curriculum, you take it in your country and you increase vocational training. You popularize it, because parents, students don't like vocational training. They want their children to be lawyers. Yet the small to medium enterprises really rely on products of vocational training. So training and change of curriculum is how we carry the young people. Number two is to ensure that the same technology which they see in the rest of the world, because they are on internet, you do not deny them that opportunity to innovate. So Uganda has funds for young people who are in that space. You're creating apps, you're creating some software. For me, I find that apps and software is the low rank of IT. The highest rank young people here in the US, I see they're building systems for water, for electricity, but we will get there. What we need is to maintain stability so that those young people now don't have to run out of the country. Provide infrastructure, IT infrastructure, roads, water, so that they are able to enjoy their country. And three, make policies that are pro-young people's businesses. Entrepreneurship is what will save Africa. And now I find that if we encourage vocational training, people don't have to get university degrees to become something. They can become good engineers and design things in their homes and in their farms, because we have plenty of legroom in agriculture to grow. We are only 40 million people. Our country can feed up to 200 million. That's going to be a lot of processing and value addition that comes from supporting youth enterprises.
What is the time frame that the government is giving itself to actualize this plan for which you are going around here in the US and parts of Europe?
We've given ourselves 6 to 7 years, because we think the first 2 years is learning curve. Even getting people to work together in the public and private sector to focus on things, for example, an export credit fund. How do I bring my products to Chicago when I really have to rely on commercial banks that charge 20% interest? When a producer in the US is 0.1% interest. So we're trying to set up an export credit fund, and that takes time. Changing laws to get Parliament to pass some of the laws, 8 laws in food safety standards, animal biohealth, environment, the things that FDA requires, takes about 2 to 3 years. Now, attitude change, changing of opinion to focus on these markets also takes time. So we think the first 2 years is learning curve. After that, we'll shoot running, because we'll now know what to do, and we'll have partners in capital, partners in retail, partners in technology that we can work with in the developed world with our entrepreneurs in Uganda.
Odrek Rabwogo is a senior Ugandan presidential advisor on special duties. He spoke with me via Skype from here in Washington. Described as a socially conscious writer, Ugandan Jason Ntaru says poetry is gradually gaining roots and significant attention in the East African country. This after some schools began teaching poetry to their students. Ntaru says event organizers are now opening up spaces and poetry events as it gains general acceptance across the country. He is a regular on poetry platforms in the capital, Kampala. He is also a member of the Lantern Meets of Poets, a community of writers and thinkers who express their creativity through writing and performing at recitals in Uganda. To learn more about how he became a poet and the impact it is having in Uganda, I read Jason Ntaro.
Originally, I got into poetry because I wanted to meet girls. That's honest truth. But then later on, as I continued doing poetry, I was invited by a group called the Lantern Meet of Poets. So I went the first time, and it was a whole different experience because I was used to the class experience. So then they gave us the opportunity to now write your own poem. So I wrote a poem called 3 Years, 2 Months, and 5 Days, which is on domestic violence. And it received a lot of positive comments. And that's how I started to get into now stage performance. I'd never done it before. And from there, it just became a slippery slope. And I've continued with it because it helps me to let go of my stress, let go of my pain, let go of my anguish. So I usually, most of my poetry is darkish, and it usually talks about social consciousness or things that are happening within one's soul.
After practicing poetry for some time now, what impact do you think poetry is having on the Ugandan society, as you can see currently?
It has helped so many people to get in touch with themselves within, because we live in a society where we focus very much on how the world's going to perceive me. And now with poetry, you get to now speak your honest truth from the core of your heart. Then also, schools have now started to also now take on a different perspective on poetry. Then also when it comes to social responsibility, very many people come out now and they speak freely and honestly about how they're feeling because of maybe politics or economics or whatever it be. So poetry in itself has been something that has helped to aid people to come through all of the things that they've been going through.
For a young person who would want to take up poetry, what should they do? What steps should they take?
What would I advise someone who is coming into poetry? I would tell them it needs you to be 100% honest, and it's going to need for you to be ready for a lot of criticism, because a lot of people say, oh, poetry, you're not going to ever make a living. With poetry, you can't do anything. Poetry is just it's just a passion. It's just, you know, a pastime or a hobby. And yet when you get into it, you start to realize what more it can do. So you have to be very strong. You have to be ready to practice every single day. And then you have to have self-initiative. When you see that there's a platform, go onto that platform, okay? So you have to have a lot of self-esteem. It helps to build your self-esteem along the way. But then in itself, you also have to have that fire within you.
All right, Jason, before we go, can you give us a short poem on Africa?
You see, Africa isn't about negativity. Africa isn't about black slavery or kids working in industry. Africa isn't only about blood spilled by tyrants, wars run by children, or AIDS and frustration. Africa isn't about black being beauty, about women with heavy booty, or about green grass and skyscraping hills. Africa isn't about natives walking about naked, or about corrupt leaders leaving us frustrated. Africa isn't about landmines and illegal arms, or rebels leaving us all alarmed, state of panic. Africa isn't about Africans battling malnutrition or politicians with verbal constipation. Africa isn't about children befriending dirt and disease, or about being comfortable with this. It's about the individual, that solitary soul, not those diamonds and rocks or gold. No, sure, we have all of these minerals, and sure, we've got these beautiful natural blessings, but there is something bigger than that we are all missing. As opposed to the talk of nature, I speak of natives. I speak of that handcrafted beauty named people, of warm hearts, of kind smiles and nights wild. And when I say wild, I don't mean forest jungle wild, no. I mean that fire that burns deep within the souls of men, of women, and of children. Of the fire that moved them from yesterday to today and to tomorrow and further days. So, smile, my African friend. But do not smile for Africa, no. Smile about Africa. Thank you very much.
Jason Ntaro is a Ugandan poet. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Bowman Lusambu, a former minister of Zambia's Lusaka province, says he accepts a court ruling which nullified his election as a parliamentarian representing Kabushi constituency. This after a high court in Indola nullified his win in last August's general election, citing voter irregularities, rigging, and violence. The ruling was upheld by the Constitutional Court in the capital, Lusaka, this week. Critics mocked Lusambo on social media, saying it serves him right after accusing him of being arrogant, brash, and disrespectful as a minister during the previous administration. His supporters, however, are sympathizing with him, saying they would vote for him should he contest again. The nullification paves the way for a by-election within 90 days of the ruling. For his reaction to the Constitutional Court decision, I reach Bowman Lusambo.
First of all, I want to thank God because in whatever situation you find yourself in, you just have to thank God because God is our creator and he knows all our plans and all our situations. So I want to thank God for this situation. And we have accepted the outcome from the Pond Court. To us, it is a very minor setback. And we'll use this time to re-strategize and see how we can get back.
It suggested that there will be a by-election to fill the slot that you lost as a member of parliament. How confident are you that you'll be able to win back your seat?
It's not about me. It's about the people themselves. If you go to Kavushi or if you get the reaction from the people of Zambia, they are very disappointed and discouraged. So it is not about Bowman, it's about the people of Kavushi. So for me, this is Kavushi's seat. It is not the government seat. So it's a people's seat. So the people themselves, actually, way back when the High Court nullified this seat, the people didn't even want for us to appeal. They wanted a fresh election in Kavushi constituency because they know the person they want in Kavushi constituency.
Some people are teasing you for losing your Kavushi parliamentary seat when you posted your reaction on your Facebook page. Others are sympathizing with you. Overall, what is your reaction about how people are reacting to, you know, your statement online?
This is the world we live in. Some people, they rejoice the misery of others. Others, they sympathize the misery of other people. So that is the way the world we live in is.
What do you say to some of your critics who say that you had this coming to you because you were brash, you were vociferous, you criticized a lot, and that is why it appears that this has happened to you? How do you respond to them?
For me, Peter, the most important thing, I don't react to people's comments. I don't react to people's opinion. I react to what my heart is telling me. And for me, what they're saying, it could be true or not true, but the most important thing is what I believe in. Peter, I came on a political scene for the first time in 2016, and I won with a landslide. And I won against landslide. So for me, I can just assure you, Peter, that the people of Kavushi constituency, they will never be bribed. And the people of Kavushi constituency, they know what they want. So I can assure you that whether the nullification of the seat, what has happened today from the Concord, it will not change the minds of the people in Kavushi constituency. Actually, the Concord, what they have done, it is good for us. It is a cleanser. The Concord, they are just cleaning us. Because going back in a Kavushi constituency, we will be victorious with a landslide the way we managed to do it even in the last election.
So what is your next line of action? Are you therefore going to compete again?
So now what we are doing now is that we are reflecting now. We are reflecting with my team, my family, my party, so that we come up with the next course of action.
Boma Lusambo is a former parliamentarian and former minister of Lusaka province. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, Friday called for more to be done to protect African refugees and migrants from traffickers on their way from the Sahel and the Horn of Africa toward North Africa and Europe. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantu says traffickers take advantage of African refugees fleeing persecution and violence and of migrants fleeing poverty and climate shocks, subjecting them to appalling abuse.
Some of them are left to die in the desert. Others and suffer repeated sexual and gender-based violence, kidnapping, ransom, torture, and many other forms of physical and psychological abuse. So the human trafficking issue is widespread, and it's incredibly alarming.
The report issued by the UNHCR and the Mixed Migration Center at the Danish Refugee Council is based on information from 12 countries, from Burkina Faso and Cameroon to Somalia and Sudan. Mantu tells VOA human traffickers and smugglers use technology and online platforms to advertise their services to unsuspecting victims. She says traffickers employ the internet to identify, groom, and recruit victims, including children. She says the UNHCR is urging governments and the private sector to work together to crack down on the use of the internet by traffickers.
These same digital technologies can be leveraged to actually counter the issue and counter trafficking by helping empower communities with trustworthy information to better protect themselves and also be aware of the risks that they might face on these journeys. To ensure that there are protection services available to the people that are taking these precarious and perilous journeys to prevent and end the human trafficking and smuggling risks.
The report provides tailored information for refugees and migrants on services available on different routes. The UNHCR is calling for the creation of shelters and safe places, better access to legal services, and specialized services for children and female survivors of trafficking and gender-based violence. UNHCR officials stress the importance of identifying critical locations to serve as so-called last stops, places where refugees and migrants can get information about the dangers that lie ahead before they embark on journeys across the Sahara. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Regrettably, the game of information warfare has clouded rather than clarified issues relating to food crisis in the world. According to the Western narrative, the problem for the food crisis is due solely to Putin's war in Ukraine and the resulting increase in the cost of living. The Russian narrative is that whatever food crisis there may be, it is due to what they consider illegal Western sanction against Russia. The Africans have their own concern. They have called on both Russia and Ukraine to facilitate export of wheat and fertilizer to the African continent. their proposed ideas to solve the problem. In fact, since the end of May, the outline of a balanced approach to resolving this crisis has been available. President Macky Sall of Senegal, speaking on behalf of Africa, went to see President Putin and the President of the European Union. He outlined the point of view. And the Secretary General of the United Nations also put forth similar balanced approach. Nevertheless, it was only a week ago that a detailed agreement was reached through the good offices of the President of Turkey and the Secretary General of the United Nations. Arrangements have now been made for the possible export of wheat and fertilizer to the outside world, including the African continent. Russia is the largest wheat exporter in the world, and Ukraine is the fifth largest exporter. In addition, Ukraine is the largest exporter of sunflower oil, which is necessary in the African continent. And Russia is the highest exporter of fertilizer. This agreement is now being planned to be implemented. But Africa must realize that despite the agreement, there are difficulties in the implementation. For example, executives of shipping and insurance firms are expressing serious fear that the mining of shipping lanes in and around Ukraine may present difficulties. On the other hand, Russia is hoping that the relaxation of sanctions involving insurance and shipping would facilitate its own export of wheat and fertilizer. Even all of this should go through. Africa should not be in delusion that the food crisis has ended in Africa. The question of food crisis in the Horn of Africa has been there for the last 4 years. The problem there is the World Food Program has not been able to raise voluntary contribution to purchase enough food for the African continent. Also, there are problems with other items. The president of Uganda was very firm that Africans should look for other alternatives, such as cassava products, to substitute for wheat grains coming from Europe. Also, South Africa is now forced to change its policy on global warming. In the last 4 months, South Africa has been exporting coal to Europe to meet the deficit resulting from the reduction of Russian oil and gas. And Nigeria is under pressure to build a pipeline so that Nigeria should sell fuel and gas to Europe. All of these are issues which go against efforts to tackle global warming. So let's hope that the implementation of the agreement goes forward and that the matter of food crisis linked to the Ukrainian war will be over. Overall, the African continent is appealing to the parties to secede all conflicts by means of a global ceasefire. and the restoration of peace in Ukraine. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Labda wakua inhabitants. Boots down and car reverse. Shaped up body, you the make man and take chance. Any side you pass, you comp in them even they clowns. Fine, fine girl, make the pop even shit pants. Rectangular move, a rectangular zoom. For see how I go come to me, vascular loose. So blood flow easy, girl, you sabi tease me. Me now on a comfort time, me not so that's these cheeks. Slow wine, slow wine. Look what you the close shine. Some man in a fish, so baby I can throw a line. All fine, no mind. Look what then the blow mine. You body not like quaver, baby you the flow fine.
Mama sita jo ni chupa shinda zari.
Yes,
min kona flow kali kali.
Yes,
miupiga show mbali mbali.
Yes,
min kona dona magari.
Yes,
una hate na una soko mshwari. Da piga kolabo na fali. Then goma na dola kabari. Aro boy kan kata jua kali.
Yes,
play K ijo na sita fadali.
Yes,
nyaji watu wangu wa senali.
Yes,
season yetu msiwari.
Yes,
min shapa shabari.
Yes,
ule kijana hodari.
Yes,
lazima tuishi fahari. Donne na links na Omari. Bispia na piga na pasari.
Yes,
veve na shikisha na maari.
Yes,
2020 tuko ki.
Yes,
BNM na OG.
Yes,
itabidi mumeti.
Yes,
jusisi ndio committee.
Yes,
and they got nothing on we. Jogo wa shamba na wikamuji.
Yes,
mano disi majilingi.
Yes,
kuna mashore kwa wingi. Money wana bandi kona.
Yes,
bogi mzima ina choma.
Yes,
ina tupandisha choma.
Yes,
in the city, send your hope.
Yes,
marijuana on the corner.
Yes,
Bogim Zima in a choma.
Yes,
in a Dubai, Jajoba.
Yes,
in the city, send your hope.
Buddha see world kaluka.
Yes, man.
Ntami uchil na mafiat.
Yes, man.
Gangsta timba no kiat.
Yes, man.
Tunapiga jinja na shaku.
Yes, man.
Nikona mangoma za power.
Ooh.
Wanuliza mbona madawa.
Ooh.
Feeling meshona visawa.
Yeah.
Fly kanikona mabawa. Mini rastyo ni ready to sina. Na nishai kuwa tegi masimba. Najo mapredi na jina.
Yes,
either way hamuwezi kunshinda.
Yes,
ukikuja ismi kamanda.
Yes,
try kuni dispe ni blanda.
Yes,
form ni mazish na matanga. Na misi na beef na ohanga.
Spendi.
Ohanga unitaki kwa nini.
Yes,
bona swanye traki na mimi.
Yes,
tutop izi chati za mjini.
Yes,
after that you'll be happy ya mini.
Yes,
stack interviews za gazeti.
No.
Maswali zo fala zileti.
No.
Miwomba kandini wanzeki.
Woo.
Got ka Ronaldo na Messi.
Brr.
Nani mingine ka mimi.
Hakuna.
Mafta na paka marini.
Hey.
Gachinda Rosa na Timi.
Ma.
New rap kama Hova na Nyinyi.
Yeah.
Shinsky kolabo tufanyi.
Yes,
tushike from Dago tukani.
Yes,
into brother kwa semani.
Yes,
usitry kunishwa iwezekani.
Yes,
huda simu wa shiki.
Yes,
anadhani mina try kumpiga meet.
Yes,
nina wife tosipendi zo kiki.
Yes,
I'm done with this shit joriti.
Yes,
2022 koki. BNM na OG.
Yes,
itabidi mumeti.
Yes,
just is in your committee.
Oh,
and they got nothing on we. Jogo wa shamba na we kamu jini. Mano disi majilingi. Kuna mashore ku wing bingi.
Pera ni mafuna ko chikondi. Ni mafuna kunkala ko panzi. Manje mu machoka che misosi. No. Ni maesa kunkala ko ambo. Kufaita kuchita na struggle.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here, the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are there on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nadia Taha, we say thanks for joining us. I remember, as the elders say, one can only believe the fish that says the eye of the crocodile is rotten. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.